the decision was made to send in American soldiers to Iraq to free the country from the grips of its dictator, Saddam Hussein, most of the soldiers were certain they were being sent there to protect people's lives and to liberate Iraq from the dominance of its regime. But soon after taking position, their mission area changed to Iraq's oil fields. And so they had to fight against Iraqi militia to seize oil wells. This was what the majority of the soldiers deployed to Iraq faced in the early days of the war.
The truth of it is that while I was in Iraq, we were on our way to, quote, liberate the city of Kirkuk in northern Iraq. And while my unit was waiting for another battalion to link up with us, I overheard my battalion commander, who's a lieutenant colonel, it's pretty high in the military. I overheard him say, as the Kurds were pouring into the city, that we can't let the Kurds take the oil fields. When he said this, it triggered something in my head. I mean, this was a couple days after the so-called fall of Baghdad. It was, you know, early April. And this was what came out of his mouth, and this is what sent a battalion into Kirkuk. Even though we were waiting on, you know, 1,500 other soldiers, we went because the Kurds were going to take the oil fields.
Yes, I mean, our unit went straight to the oil fields in the north, essentially. And that was like, you know, that was a key area that they sent the whole brigade to secure that area.
What happened then when you secured that area?
We had it. I mean, we occupied it and continue to occupy it to this day.
Therefore, the American soldiers and then their families, and later on the people who were in contact with them in America, understood the fact that the American government is not looking for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but rather pursuing other secret plans in the area. But what are the secret plans, and what good comes from these plans for the American people?
That's why we're stuck in Iraq, worse than Vietnam, stuck in Afghanistan, worse than Vietnam, because there is no end in sight. And we keep lying to ourselves by using these fraudulent or faulty intelligence analyses.
Is that the war in Iraq and Afghanistan was a complex and intricate project to secure the profits of certain groups in America who have their roots in Wall Street and American Zionist circles. These mafia-style organizations have significant influence on America's economy. They follow their own evil agenda by spending considerable amounts of money and alluring some members of the American administration. But unfortunately, their agenda is in complete contrast with the profits of the American people and is by no means in their service.
But for me, when I look at these kinds of issues, the simplest way to understand them is to look at the United States as an empire. It's an empire with hundreds of bases around the world, 761 bases around the world, more than 100 countries. And when you look at a map of the world, you can see why we're in Afghanistan, why we're in the Middle East, why we're threatening Iran. These are strategic locations for a variety of important resources and for economic control of the world economy and the key resources. The chessboard shows we, the United States, in the Middle East.
I mean, I've quoted Einstein 20 times this year about insanity is you keep making the same mistake and you expect it to come out differently. And they keep doing the same thing. You know, I mean, you know what? I don't think they're going to run it. Sometimes I can do an extra column, you know, but I better be careful. But I sent one in, which they probably won't run in the next 2 days, just for space reasons. So I'll have to do it in one of my regular ones. But I said, I propose that, remember the Scarlet Letter? It was a novel where the woman committed adultery and she had to wear an A on her head for adultery. I said, everybody in Congress, Democratic or Republican, should wear a big button that says, I took money from Goldman Sachs. I took money from Wall Street, right here. And do wear a button for every company that gave you money. So the Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, they'd look ridiculous. They'd all be walking around. Okay, but no, think about it.
Who pays for the war? It's the average American citizen. Pays for it in blood through their children, and pays for it in tax dollars and deficits. Our grandchildren will be paying for this war.
Despite Obama's campaign slogans during the election and the claims to bring change in domestic and foreign policies of America, his administration followed the same economic and foreign policies of the Bush administration after it set to work. And his gesture of autonomy and independence were way beyond reality.
Then I know that we can win Virginia and we can win this election and we can finally bring the change we need to Washington.
I mean, Obama, on Sunday night, he goes on 60 Minutes, and he attacks the fat cats, okay? Monday morning, he has a meeting at the White House, and they're all friends. They're all, you know. And Obama has little life experience in these areas before he became president. You know, he knew a few of them from Harvard, okay? And they're not necessarily the solution. But he doesn't understand, you know, that they're going to fight for every penny of profit.
No, I think the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, particularly the one in Afghanistan right now, are essentially disasters. I mean, we are at serious risk of leaving Afghanistan with over 1,000 soldiers and Marines dead and almost nothing to show for it.
Supporting the troops is one thing. Supporting the war is another. And I think if you really want to support the troops, the best thing for you to do is to make sure that the system changes. It's so easy to get angry at this video at a couple of soldiers saying, well, they're just cold-hearted killers. But these soldiers are doing exactly what they're trained to do.
The chaotic state of America's economy and the continuous exasperation of the financial crisis show that the war could not provide any profits for the American people. Instead, its numerous burdens have befallen the poor people of the country. Now the American people, regardless of their class, have realized that not only has the war's expenses not helped their economy, but it has also stalled the production processes.
If you took all the money being spent in the military, for the military, and got out of this war and put it right back in our country, we would not be in the position that we're in right now. People have to understand that. Millions and trillions, bazillions of dollars every single day. Put it right back into this economy, we wouldn't be where we are right now. So by you bringing it back to the forefront, hopefully more people will say, hey, you know what? She's right. They're right. So, I mean, you're doing a lot for us right now.
I mean, we now have to go to the Chinese to get the money to pay for our own military, in fact, and our own economic policy and our own domestic policy. And so the issues in the Middle East, meaning Afghanistan and Iraq right now, are issues that limit our ability to spend money that we no longer have.
For a country that has to tighten its purse strings, as you know, the president says, and the military budget over $1 trillion, while you know, schools are being shut down, privatized, You know, I mean, certainly, the U.S. government doesn't do enough for the workers of the United States.
Would we rather have universal health care or two wars? Would we rather have military bases all across the world or a better unemployment system? If you could actually have that honest debate about real policy issues in this country, then I think we would see how obsolete war has become.
Moreover, America's interference has not had any positive outcome for people in the occupied countries of Iraq and Afghanistan. In these two countries, people shortly felt the sweet taste of freedom from their dictators and became hopeful of a better future. But soon after the invading forces took the place of the despotic rulers and committed atrocities much worse than the past.
Everything has changed. From now on, Saddam Hussein will no longer torture people in Abu Ghraib prison. From now on, we will do it. And running the country will not take place behind the closed walls of Saddam's palace because he's gone, and we're going to do it from the closed walls of Saddam's palace. And that's how you show people that change is coming? And it shows a certain lack of sensitivity, a certain lack of cultural understanding to do it that way, but we did it.
The more people that were killed, the more angry people got, the more people that were arrested and detained for no reason, their cars confiscated. These things were happened all the time. People were moved from their homes and other people moved in. I mean, these things happened day after day and day, and this is part of what my unit was there to do.
To me, the wars are still racist genocide that have nothing to do with security. That put a lot of people's, you know, lives, you know, at risk, and I sometimes even have a hard time living in this country because I'm so disgusted by what it's doing, and I'm so disgusted by the passivity which, you know, people greet this knowledge of war crimes with.
America's current economic crisis, mainly caused by the excessive expenditures imposed on the economy through the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, has created a condition in which many youth are unable to find jobs. On top of that, the closure of several manufacturing, industrial, and commercial centers has caused the rate of unemployment to rise by the day. This has made the youth incapable of meeting their living and education costs. Therefore, many of them have no other choice but to turn to the army and war, the only still thriving job in America to eke out a living and save some money to continue their education. These days, only the Centers for Recruiting Military Forces are busy with loads of clients. The American unemployed youth have to refer to such centers to make a living.
The major story in the media was that the military could not meet its recruiting quotas. They were at record lows. They could not get anyone to go fight and die in Iraq and Afghanistan. Once the economic crisis hit, the story was the opposite, that more people were joining the military than ever before. And that reveals that the military isn't made up of people who want to go fight terrorism, who want to go defend democracy. It's made up of people who have no other option.
The Pentagon was saved because we had an economic depression. 20 million people lost their jobs in the United States because of what the banks did to the economy. That was in 2007, 2008. If you can't work, if you can't go to school, and the military is coming to your family, to your neighborhood, to your school, to your shopping center, and saying, well, come in to the military and we'll give you a nice cash bonus. And afterwards, you can go to college. Many people under those circumstances will say yes, because they have to eat. They have to feed themselves. They want a future. So the biggest recruitment was the economic downturn.
$1 billion of expenses, more than 5,200 American soldiers dead, 40,000 American soldiers maimed or crippled, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead and wounded. Iraq is not much better, like I said earlier. Iraq is not in a better condition now than it was before the invasion of Iraq in 2003.
And a lot of my friends, were shot up. Several of them were wounded, and he died. And I mean, with that, it's pretty interesting because I read all the reports and how he was honored, and it was such lies. They had heralded him as like this, you know, man that wanted to just fight for the United States and free Afghanistan and all these things. And like I said, he was literally there for us to pay off college loans.
Because there's still a sort of draft into our army now, except it's a volunteer army, but it's a subtle draft, like an underground draft, an economic draft, right? Because it's the poor, oftentimes minorities, who end up joining the army because that's where a job opportunity is, and they need the money, maybe the money for college. And so it's still a form of underground draft.
We have carried the fight to the enemy. We are rolling back the terrorist threat to civilization.
The claim that the American Army can help make developments in the reconstruction of Iraq and Afghanistan does not stand valid in any expertise circle. Most experts believe that the Army cannot play a constructive role and that it's mostly interwoven with destruction and ruin. And if anything is to be done for these two occupied countries, it must be executed merely by the people of these countries themselves. The presence of the U.S. and NATO forces in Iraq and Afghanistan for several years has already proven this claim.
The same idea tends to bring out the ideology that, well, the United States destroyed Iraq. It needs to rebuild Iraq. The United States created this huge problem. It can't leave or there'll be civil war. Well, this is certainly not true. And it's not the United States' job. It's not the people of the U.S.'s job to rebuild Iraq. You know, it certainly is the U.S.'s responsibility to provide the money for the people of Iraq to rebuild Iraq.
Honestly, a lot of these soldiers that are going over there have it in their mind and in their hearts that they want to go help. And they believe that's what they're doing, that they're going to go build schools, they're going to, you know, bring jobs to Iraq, they're going to, you know, help these people rebuild their lives. But that's not what the United States military is. They have guns. And all that they do is occupy and kill and protect interests.
What could have been a completed mission and a total American withdrawal from Afghanistan never happened. Taliban was given plenty of opportunity to regroup under the U.S. occupation and NATO occupation and British occupation. Afghanistan became the largest source of opium and heroin production for the entire world. And so now you've got 95% of the world's opium production and over 90% of the world's heroin production coming out of Afghanistan. That has become a business that generates globally hundreds of billions of dollars a year. So we've taken a country that prior to 1979 had no history of drug production to speak of.
We haven't achieved anything of note in Iraq and Afghanistan. We haven't won militarily. The oil production rate in Iraq is below that of when it was under Saddam Hussein, even after a decade of economic sanctions. In Afghanistan, we have no viable government. The Taliban, whom we defeated in 2001, 2002, the Taliban right now controls, you know, 60-70% of the countryside. The Taliban is viued as far more legitimate than the Karzai government. What have we achieved? The war has expanded into Pakistan with consequences the American people have yet to come to grips with. No, we haven't achieved anything of note.
The statistics on the increase of poppy and drugs plantation in Afghanistan is a serious warning for any international observer. Since the occupation of Afghanistan by NATO forces headed by the U.S., the production of these opiates has increased tenfold.
In Afghanistan, where you saw the massive rise
of the opium production and even the development of heroin refineries, which was not even present in Afghanistan ever in history before the occupation by the NATO and U.S. forces. So our impact has been negative, more negative in Afghanistan than it has been in Iraq, because we're making more and more compromises as we go along, especially on this opium.
Yes, they have achieved, I would say, further destruction of Afghanistan, total destabilization of the region, strengthening the drug traffickers and the drug networks enormously. It was not there. The drug traffickers and the drug networks have already started moving in, or at least developing the Fergana Valley as the next drug center. That's why you see the trouble in Kyrgyzstan.
In a perfect world, and if I were president, I would spend the money. I would give it to the poppy people to grow food to feed the Afghans, so they're not growing poppy that ends up on American streets hurting American kids and causing crime in America.
The growing discontent of the American public, voiced through street protests in various U.S. cities, along with statements issued by experts and professionals in some scientific and academic circles, has led to a general resistance in America against the demanding policies of the White House and Wall Street. The anti-Wall Street movement and the simultaneous liberation uprisings in Islamic countries and the anti-capitalist movements in the streets of New York and other cities around the U.S. and Europe are examples of people's objections to the pro-war policies of the White House.
Each and every one of you, the economy in this country is crumbling because all the money in this economy is going out. It's not coming back into our communities. It's not coming back into the social services that people who work their asses off rely on. People who rely on welfare in this country are not people who just waste it. They have to support families. And these services continue to be shipped away just so that this mindless war can go on. Change some emails. Start talking to each other. You know that person that you see on the bus? You think he or she might actually, you know, have the same thoughts? Approach that person. All it takes is a little bit of approach. We have to break this cowardice of isolation that the White House is pumping out to everybody. We have to stand united.
That for McDonald's to triumph in the global market, you needed the hidden hand of McDonnell Douglas. Meaning, for American corporations, even a hamburger company like McDonald's, for it to have access to markets, they had to be backed up by the enforcement arm of the U.S. military. So there's a synergy, or maybe it's a symbiotic relationship between corporate America, its global interests, and the Pentagon, which acts as an enforcement army for their interests.
Many Americans are also worried about the war, the fact that we have two wars going on now. And this has an extreme cost in time and energy for the country.
And, you know, when we talk about how much have we spent on the war, how much is the war costing, we're only talking about what DOD spends on the war. We're not talking about the future obligations that are incurred in things like our veterans programs. And so that could actually be a pretty significant cost in the long run.
So civil disobedience has many clear manifestations in America and Europe. People are not willing to pay for the mistakes, wrong policies, and excessive demands of the affluent capitalists. They shout out loud in the streets that the ruling of 1% over the 99% is enough, and these deadly wars should end.
Well, that made me realize that the generals in the Pentagon, who are in our chain of command, who are supposed to be our bosses, you know, if they're going to do these types of things, if they're going to send us to war for a lie, knowing it's going to be a lie, sending us to our deaths for really the profit of a small group of people, for some defense contractors, from some CEOs on Wall Street, you know, if they're going to do that, then we don't have any reason, we have the right to not obey those orders.